You're listening to the Leafs Lunch Podcast, Hour 1.
Welcome to the Friday edition of Leafs Lunch. Jim Taddy and Kristen Schulten with you. Andy Petrillo on Olympic assignment, as you're well aware, and doing a nice job. We've got some stuff to cover here. Craig J. Button will be with us very shortly because it's draft night. Later on, Michigan coach Mel Pearson, who likely will have the top two and maybe three in the top 10. I mean, the top two from one team is quite a story, let alone the top two from the NCAA. But we'll get into that. Kristen, welcome. How are you today?
I am fabulous, Jim. How are you on this Friday?
Great, and I'm always excited. You know, for years, the entry draft has been one of my summer highlights. Love it, just because of covered junior hockey for many years, and was like watching going to a grad class in my early days. But I love it, and you know, the expansion draft and free agency around the corner. I mean, normally at this point of July, a lot of the dust has settled, but we're right in the middle of it, aren't we?
Yeah, it is quite it was throwing me off the other day because someone said to me, oh yeah, you know, it's, we're going away for like the end of July into August. And I was like, isn't it June? Like, what's happening here? What month is it? What year is it? I don't know. But that's COVID, right? Like in my mind, it's still like 2019. I think I've skipped over, I've blocked it out. So it's quite the time of year now to be so busy on the NHL calendar. And as the schedule was just released yesterday, it's not too long before training camps are going to be up and running. And we've got an 82 game schedule to look forward to this season.
Yeah, and you did a nice job on social media pointing out the quirks of the Leafs schedule. And, you know, now that we have that in front of us, when you look at it, I mean, you see that, you know, you can start plugging in the reality. I mean, it's great to talk about what could happen in the summer with additions here and there. But when you have the specific schedule, and I know you're going to zero in on the goaltending, you see what the requirements are. I mean, it's mapped out, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there was some notes that we were looking at or that I had tweeted out from the team, and just, you know, 13 back-to-backs on the schedule, April being such a hugely busy month for them, 15 games, 10 on the road, like that's tough. And then you've got a long road trip, you've got a bunch of long road trips in December and January as well. That Olympic break potentially is almost 3 weeks long in February. So that's, you know, that's a hurdle. Like, you're going and then it stops and you've got to pick it back up again. So it is interesting, though, to see the way that the schedule is coming together and see American teams like the Leafs are going to be back going again. It's kind of crazy. Just because it's been so long and we had such an insulated regular season last year here in the North Division. So it's exciting, though. I think just as a hockey fan, you've got to be excited about teams playing each other again. And I don't know about you, but I had thought it might be cool to see some of the baseball style series like we did this year, where teams would go to a city and maybe play each other a couple of times. And that didn't end up happening. I think there's maybe one or two examples of it around the entire league, but ultimately it didn't sound like that was a really big sticking point for very many teams, so the league didn't work it in. But I just think that part was cool. If there was anything that jumped out about the schedule last year, it was just getting to see a team play a bunch of times, kind of like in baseball. I don't know. I kind of thought that was a nice wrinkle.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's some things that happened during the altered state that stuck to the wall for me. I like that. I certainly like the Canadian division. However, you know, I'm going to suggest, and we don't know that this is fact. I mean, there's an Olympic break built in there, but and then there are talks, and it looks positive, but not confirmed. And so to try and do something to the schedule when you penciled in an Olympic break really paints you into a corner. And you look at it starts October 13th and ends on April 29th. So it's pushed over slightly, but you know, and the back end is for everybody is massively busy. It is unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, and that was where I think there had been hesitancy in the past about having an Olympic break for players and for the league. For all of it, just because it is, and when you see it again, because we haven't seen it in a while, because the NHL didn't go to the last Winter Olympics, when you see it there sort of in print, you're just thinking, wow, like it really does condense everything else when you have that break in there. And it's a great thing for hockey. Certainly, I'm on record. Like, I love seeing NHL players at the Olympics. I just think it makes for such a competitive, fun, event. And I think it's a great thing. But from the NHL perspective, I do get why. At the same time, there's a lot of there's a lot of considerations that have to be taken for the players and for their health, for their for the sake of their seasons here in the NHL, right? Like, you don't want them to be completely tired out, and so there's a lot that needs to be taken into account there. But if we get to see NHLers back at the Olympics in hockey, it'll be a great thing.
Yeah, expecting Craig J. Button to join us very shortly. His mock draft is up on TSN.ca. And as I said earlier, two guys out of Michigan expected to go 1-2. You know, the NCAA domination at the top of the draft is certainly doesn't happen on a regular basis, if ever. I mean, it has happened, but not too often. But to have two from the same club is fascinating. And to have three picks in the top 10 from the same team, two of them centers. I mean, that's good. That's an interesting story to follow, isn't it?
Yeah, and isn't it interesting sort of the nature of hockey and how it's, you never really know at this point, because the game has grown so much, really where those top players are going to come from. You know, you see them coming from, sure, the OHL and those classic pipelines, but now it's, you do see it from the NC2A, you see them from Europe, you see players taking, you know, maybe less traditional paths to those top spots. Even Austin Matthews going overseas for a year and then coming and becoming the first overall pick. Like, it's, there's just different avenues and opportunities for players now, and for Owen Power and Matty Beniers, who are expected to go 1-2, but of course Craig Button will give us more insight on that when he joins us. It's a pretty cool thing for the game of hockey to just see how players are developing so well, maybe in just different places than we would have seen even 5 years ago. Not that the NC2A wasn't a great pipeline, but at the top of the draft board, like, it was always, it's got to be like OHL, right? There's always, it's OHL, it's WHL, it's something in Canada. And so now we're just seeing the expansion of the sport in general and where prospects are developing. And it's really cool. And it's I think, a really good sign for the sport as well.
Okay, while we're waiting to hook up with Craig, just let me go down this road. The Hyman situation, yesterday looked like it was going to happen, and now it's sort of off to the side. What's your read on that?
Well, with Hyman, it's what we've really been, I think, discussing for the last week or so, which is that the Leafs have their line in the sand of this is what we can do. This is what the salary cap is going to allow us to do. And Hyman knows that. I'm very confident in from what Kyle Dubas said yesterday, that the Leafs have made as strong an offer as they can. And it sounded, you know, from what Dubas said yesterday, that Todd Reynolds, you know, who's Hyman's agent, you know, he basically pulled the league and found that there was just a bigger market, a bigger AAV out there for Hyman. And so that's why the Leafs gave him the opportunity early to explore that. Even though the UFA talking period doesn't really exist anymore, the Leafs said, go talk, like, find out, you know, what's out there. And if our offer isn't what you want, then, hey, maybe we can orchestrate a sign and trade. Maybe we can get something back here. And that's kind of where they're at right now. Is Kyle Dubas said that the Leafs still have hope that Hyman will resign, but it just sounds like from the conversations that he's been having in Edmonton and from what the marketplace will dictate for someone of Hyman's caliber, the Leafs just aren't going to be able to get there. They have $9.4 million to address their offense, their defense, and their goaltending. So there's not really a $5.5, $6 million piece of the pie for one player in that scenario, not if the Leafs want to be a fully competitive team next season. And they have really no choice but to be that. And I, you know, we'll probably get into it later in the show, but I thought that Dubas had a great breakdown, actually on Overdrive, about how the Leafs ended up in this position of 47% of their cap being wrapped up in those four core pieces. I thought that the clip that he had with the explanation was really strong and about as good as you're going to get.
Let's bring in Craig J. Butt now. Of course, the draft goes tonight. His mock draft is on TSN.ca. He'll be part of the coverage tonight. Craig, welcome in. How are you today, sir?
I am good, Mr. Taddy. How are you?
Good. Let me check. Yes, everything's good here. I just want to. We're talking about the Hyman situation, so let me throw this at you. I mean, Edmonton and Toronto have a lot of comparables, including cap space almost. I mean, the Leafs have slightly more than Edmonton, and the offers, when you put them on a piece of paper from Edmonton and Toronto, will be slightly different. I guess the better question is, why would the Hyman situation work better in Edmonton than in Toronto?
Well, I mean, I think that Ken Holland has already talked about buying out players that will give them more cap space. And, you know, it's not so much about where it'll work out better. But, you know, it's a scenario where, you know, Zach Hyman and Kristen was just talking about the market value for a free agent and a player of Zach Hyman's ilk, where he can get that. And, you know, so, you know, hearing about Kyle Dubas holding out hope, right? Well, I bought a lotto ticket for tonight's Lotto Max. I'm holding out hope, too. I think that's, where they find themselves, you know. And, you know, it's nice to have hope, but I don't think it's a realistic hope. And unless Zach Hyman says, you know what, Toronto's where I want to play, and you know what, I'm going to do everything I can to work around their constraints. And their constraints are significant. And, you know, they're the constraints that Kyle Dubas put on himself. And does that mean that you can't go out and you have to, just surrender to what you're? No, you just got to do it in different ways. And one of the challenges is to find a real good player like Zach Hyman at dollars that can fit within those constraints. And I think that's the challenge. I mean, Brendan and Kyle have continuously talked about the confidence they have in the group, and there's no reason not to have confidence. But, you know, it's got to be done with a real sense of, okay, how do we strengthen that group and, by extension, strengthen our confidence that we have in this group and this core to be able to achieve something significant.
Well, Craig, you talk about the confidence in the core. Kyle Dubas doubled down. He said not only does he still believe in the core, this is going to be their best season ever. This is going to be the best we've ever seen from them. I mean, is that hyperbole? Do you truly believe that he can think that with such little evidence to suggest that that's the direction that this core is headed based on that playoff series? I mean, how much of it is about putting that out there so that the players hear it, people talk about it, that's the message? And how much of it do you think it truly is? Like, he can see that there is more than what we have seen from these players recently.
Okay, so Kristen, you go and you evaluate the league, and you know the league exceptionally well. Mitch Marner was a first-team All-Star right winger. Austin Matthews was a Hart Trophy finalist. You know, you start to look at the abilities of players. So Austin Matthews, I mean, he was on, what, 60-goal pace? Okay, mm-hmm. So is he going to be on a 70-goal pace next year? Mitch Marner was the first-team All-Star. What's he going to be, the universe first All-Star? Yeah, I think it's hyperbole. They're already top players, and they already perform at an elite, elite level amongst the best of the best in the National Hockey League. It's quite frankly, it's not about those guys for me. It's about how you surround them, and it's about how you give them more help in other critical areas of your team. And until they do that, they're not going to have the best season ever, and they're not going to be a successful team in the playoffs.
You know what? I like what you said there, because as I'm thinking about all those players, I mean, what were they supposed to do? Draft somebody else? And you know, you've got other examples of Buffalo repeatedly drafting good players and it not working out. And Edmonton has done the same with all those first overall picks. I mean, the bottom line is the draft is part of the answer. It's not the full answer, is it?
You're exactly right. And, you know, let's just look at the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it's easy to do because they're the two-time Stanley Cup champions. But, you know, they draft Stamkos first overall. They draft Hedman second overall. Yes, they draft Vasilevsky 19th. They're able to draft Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov past the first round. Andre Palat. We all know that teams do that. But then they recognize, okay, we have this skill. right? What else can we do to improve our team? They make trades. They end up with Ryan McDonough. They end up with Mikhail Sergachev. They end up with Eric Chernak. Then they go and they trade first-round draft picks to acquire other players to help that group. So it's not just the draft picks that you use to select players and become part of your organization. It's the other parts of it. It's recognizing, okay, you know what? We need this type of player. This is the cost, and you go out and you do it. And I think that team building is not just through the draft, because if it was just through the draft, then it would be a real simple exercise. And I think what Julian Brisebois has demonstrated in the last few years after that four-game sweep to the Columbus Blue Jackets in 2019 is they had a good core. They had a really good core. There's no question they had a good core. They won 62 games. They couldn't beat the Columbus Blue Jackets, and Julian addressed it. And so when I talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, I'm not worried about Auston Matthews or Mitch Marner or Morgan Rielly or TJ Brody. I'm not worried about those guys. Until Kyle Dubas does something to give them more and stronger support outside that group of 8-9 players, they're not going anywhere in the playoffs. I don't care what he says. They're not going anywhere.
Well, Craig, let's pivot now to the draft tonight. We were talking about your mock draft. We've got the Michigan duo at 1-2, Owen Power and Matty Beniers. What can you tell us about those players that make them special? Why are they going to most likely be the top two players taken tonight?
Well, I'll start with Owen Power. I mean, I don't know where you find defensemen like Owen Power. It's not just the skill and the sense and the he's got a thorough and complete command of the game. There's no situation you put him in that he cannot be so valuable, and that's defensively, offensively, transition. You know, everything that requires a high level of ability. He possesses it. I'll go back to Tampa Bay, Victor Hedman. Now, Owen Power is not Victor Hedman in terms of the skill level. And when I say that, very different. But in terms of the presence he has in the game and the type of ability he has to be a number one defenseman and control the game, that's what Owen Power possesses. And for me, Kristen, there's not a better player in the draft than Owen Power. I don't know where you find these guys. Everybody's looking for top pair and number one defenseman. First of all, there's very few number one, true number one defensemen. Top pair defenseman, hard to find. Owen Power, he fits that bill. Matty Beniers is I compare him to Bo Horvat. You know, that type of play where, you know, he does so many things in the game. Offensively, defensively, power play, penalty killing, you know, with his skating, with his competitiveness. And, you know, there's no area of the game you put Bo Horvat in where he doesn't find a way to contribute in some way, shape, or form. I've had some NHL personnel and people that I have great respect for say, you know what, Craig? Matty Beniers might have some of the same qualities that Jonathan Toews possesses. I hear that, Kristen, and I just go, okay, enough for me. If I'm comparing him to Bo Horvat and you want to use Jonathan Toews, I think that describes the game of Matty Beniers. He's not a dangler. He's not a flash and dash guy. He's just one of those substance guys that just helps you everywhere all the time.
Craig, when you look at this first round as you projected on your mock draft, I mean, are there lines there where the talent shifts, or does it go Owen Power and the rest, or does it go Owen Power, Beniers, and a couple of others in the rest? How do you have that categorized?
Well, I mean, there's always going to be a fall off in talent and potential. You know, if everybody was equal, then we'd have a 50. It would be like the beginning of a triathlon when everybody jumps in the water. We wouldn't know who was going to emerge, right? Everybody jumps in and it's a pack. It's not like that. And, you know, the players that we're looking at the top end of the draft, they have more talent than the players a little bit further down. The trick is, Jim and Kristen, is that, and trick is probably the wrong word. The challenge is, okay, let's project this out now. Who outside of that group of 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever you want to say, has the potential to be better than players that have already shown maybe a little bit more potential at this point in time? That's where you get the Braden points. That's where you get the Corey Perry's pick 28th in a draft, who was an MVP. That's where you look and you see that. So there's going to be a fall off in the projection of talent at this point in time, but you know, teams are going to bet that a player is going to mature and he's got more than he's been maybe able to show at this point in time and then move on from there. But I think when we look at it and we look at the 9-10 names, and I think the 9-10 or the 11 names are pretty clear. And I think there's a general acceptance that those players at this point in time are the players that are going to go in that first part of the draft. And it's much like 2018. Rasmus Dahlin went first overall. We knew that. We knew he was going first overall. Andrei Svechnikov went second. We knew he was going second overall. 3-12, and Bob McKenzie and I, you know, we were doing the draft, and we looked at, we knew who the next 10 players were going to be selected. We just didn't know in what order. And I think this draft has a lot of similarities to the 2018 draft in that regard. You know, there's kind of like those, Tristan, you know, you talk about Owen, you talk about Maddie. Is there somebody else, perhaps? But I think that next group of 7-8 players, we know who they are. We just don't know what order they're going to go in.
Well, it's interesting you bring up Dahlin, because I was thinking, you know, it was just in 2018 that Buffalo drafted him first overall, and now Buffalo's in a situation where they can draft another young defenseman in that spot. And I just wonder, I mean, what does that, I guess, do for the Sabres? I mean, you look at their last few seasons, like they've just haven't been competitive. And now they're going to have two, what should be, you know, one defenseman in Dahlin who's starting to come into some of his best years. And now you're going to add Owen Power potentially to that group. I mean, what does that, I guess, do for them? And when you look at Dahlin since 2018, when you think about him being drafted where he was, has he been as good as you thought that he would be for Buffalo? Or is it symptomatic, maybe his play, on how the entire organization has gone?
Aaron, Kristen, I think that, you know, when you talk about, you know, symptomatic of the organization, I think that's the salient point. You know, it's hard to be successful when you're in an organization that has really operated in almost complete disarray for 10 years. And so, you know, as good as you are as a young player, it's hard to excel when the support around you, there's a constant revolving door of managers and coaches and philosophies and everything. So that's going to impact you and make it very, very difficult for young players. You know, when you start to look at Owen Power and you start to try to build up your team, you know, it's not one player that's going to be a difference maker. It just doesn't work that way in hockey. It doesn't work that way in football and those real significant team sports where you're reliant upon other players to be in real critical positions. It goes back to what I said about the Toronto Maple Leafs. I have no issues with Marner or Tavares or Matthews or Neal. It's not about those guys. So they need help. And it's the same thing with Rasmus Dahlin and Owen Power. They're really important building blocks. They become really critical to an organization's success to have those types of players that can, you know, play those significant positions and take on the challenges. And I think Rasmus can do that. I'll share a story with you. It was in the 2019, beginning of the 2019 season. It was in October. And I'd been in Buffalo, and I came back, and I'd gone down, and I was watching a game. And Rasmus was unbelievable. And I phoned his agent, Donnie Meehan, and I said, Donnie, this guy's going to win Norris trophies. And he said, oh, wow, that's exciting, you know, obviously, you know. That was the beginning of his second season. But, you know, what he showed was everything that I had seen in him as a prospect. Here's the really interesting. He's 20 years old. He's 20 years old, and he's been in a situation that hasn't been optimal for him. But when you ask me, do I think he's going to realize that potential? I do, but it becomes more difficult if the environment around him doesn't give him that stability and allow him to really cement those skills into really good, strong, productive play that leads to success for the team.
Craig, in putting this list together, I mean, obviously this, because of what we've been living through, scattered performances, some people played more than others. How difficult was it?
With what?
putting the list together on based on these prospects that you have for tonight's draft? I mean, not all of them were readily available, and not all of them played the same amount.
Well, I think that there's been a dual challenge, Jim. You know, number one, the players haven't had an opportunity to demonstrate their skills. And then, by extension, the teams haven't had an opportunity to evaluate them. So you're working with a lot less information. And what that impacts is your confidence level. Your confidence level in terms of having watched them over a period of time. And I'm talking, you know, 14, 15, 16 months during real significant times of development. So that leads to not only a greater sense of uncertainty, it also leads to a greater lack of confidence. You don't build the same level of confidence that you have. So with it, there's challenges, and you're trying to dive into, you know, the past, and you're trying to dive into, okay, what do we know and what can we watch? The bottom line is, significant time was lost for the players to be able to show what they're capable of. And you can go watch a player at 15, you go watch a player at 16, you still didn't get to watch them in that critical period of time, you know, 14, 16 months, that are real critical, that really give you a greater confidence in assessing that potential. Every team is in the same boat. You know, every team is trying to, you know, garner as much knowledge and trying to get as much intel on the players as possible. But I can guarantee you this, there is no team out there, I don't care what they tell you, this is hyperbole. Their level of confidence in this year's draft and on the players is nowhere near as high as it has been in previous years.
Makes for an interesting night. Craig, thanks very much. Enjoy your night.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Kristen.
Craig J. Button, our resident scout and general manager here at TSN Hockey Headquarters. And, of course, his mock draft is up on TSN.ca. And be with him tonight as he takes you through the draft and has his response to what's happening. When we come back, we're going to talk about Leafs goaltending and a few other things that we haven't talked about yet. So that's always it's always how we move forward here on Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050, TSN1050.ca. Also available on the TSN and iHeartRadio apps.
Now, back to Leafs Lunch.
I know who they are as people. I see the work that they put in. I know their talent level. I think it's much better to go through life believing in people or something, even and especially in the face of major doubt or when it's failed and it needs to pick itself back up. And that's just how I feel about the group. And so I'd rather believe and be wrong than doubt and shift course and begin to change the way that we've done it and then look back and regret that.
That is Kyle Dubas at Overdrive yesterday, reaffirming the core four. Jim Taddy, Kristen Schulten with you on Leafs Lunch. Andy Petrillo on Olympic assignment. Get out of your vehicle lease ASAP. Over 200,000 customers per month looking to take over your lease. What a relief. Go to leasebusters.com. So, Kristen, I mean, I like what he said there. I mean, that's absolutely the way you should go forward. It's just it hasn't worked, and I think that's where the skepticism comes in.
And, you know, to Dubas's credit, he always acknowledges that it's just words. And he's the first one to say it, that it's one thing to come out and defend your team and double down on your belief in them, but it's just words until they go out there and they prove it on the ice. And you can respect that, at least. You can respect the fact that, you know, there's very much that feeling when he said yesterday, you know, I believe this is essentially I believe the best is yet to come, and I'm willing to bet everything on it. And he's not going to change course. And it's very much like, hey, I'm going down with the ship here. Like, if this doesn't go our way, at least he will know that, you know, he invested in the players that he believed in. He continued to believe in them. And if they don't deliver, it won't be because, you know, Dubas didn't get a contract done with one of the big four the way they were, one of the big three, I suppose, and then Tavares. It won't be because there was a lack of being all in. And maybe that's better than deciding now, okay, well, now we're going to panic and we're going to blow it up and we're going to try to go in a different direction. It's one of those where you are frustrated as a fan because it hasn't happened yet. You're frustrated as a management group because it hasn't happened. But at the same time, your options at this point are either keep going and hope that the work you've put in, the foundation you've laid, is going to result in what you thought all along that it would, or you blow it up and you trade the pieces away and you bring in new people, and you don't know if that's going to work any better either.
Yeah, so there are no guarantees.
Exactly. There's no guarantee that if they bring in new people, that somehow it's going to be different, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying there. I mean, that situation that I was talking about with Craig earlier about, you know, all those people that Buffalo have drafted, Edmonton, all those first-round picks, and Toronto, I mean, when you look at, you know, they've got the core four players. Well, you know, they drafted three of them. I mean, unless you were going to trade them as soon as you drafted them, you have to somehow make that work. In the other situations, it hasn't worked, but that doesn't mean that it can't work here. It's just that, you know, it seems to me that the options are somewhat limited based on a flat cap and you know, based on past failure. That's just, it's great to be positive, but there's not a lot to support it, is there?
Well, I thought that Dubas did a good job on Overdrive yesterday, just explaining essentially where their mindset was at when they invested what is now 47% of their salary cap in those four players. He said it was not our intention to be in this situation. We did not anticipate a flat cap. We did not anticipate a global pandemic. And we did not anticipate having our hands tied the way that they are at this point. But again, unless you make the decision to move one of them out, it's where you are. And the more crucial point is kind of what Craig was saying, where it's not even about those four players anymore. It's about the fact that after Nylander, Marner, Matthews, let's call it Riley, who at this point, assuming Zach Hyman is off to another team, who have they drafted that has really come through the organization to play a significant role for them now? Where are their support pieces? That's what places like Tampa have. That's what great teams have, is their pieces have come, you know, through the system. They've been drafted, they've been molded, and now they're playing a significant role. Like, not a third pairing defensive role or a bottom six forward role, but where are those other guys that the Leafs have drafted that are playing significant minutes for them or are a significant presence? And that's what's almost the bigger issue now, is not how much you have invested in your core, but that, you know, players that you have brought in previously have been traded away, or they, you know, just haven't worked out. You've made these free agent signings. Where's Miro Altonen? Where's Mikko Lehtonen? Where's Alexander Barabanov? Where, you know, are these players, Igor Ozhiganov? You brought them in and they're all gone. So that's almost the bigger issue, I think. And that's why you have to believe in the core so much, because everything that you've done for the last 5 years, essentially, has been about that core.
Yeah, I mean, that's asset management, right? And throw in Connor Brown, Kadri, Janssen, and Kapanen, who are moved out for a lot of them are related right to the cap. And, you know, you can have the draft picks around for a while, but as soon as they step into the money zone, you've got to move them out. So the question is, what do you get back for those guys? And that might be part of the issue.
Yeah, and Dubas said yesterday, you know, when it comes to Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren, he kind of said, well, you know, at some point we have to turn these prospects into players. And maybe we have blocked them a little bit. Maybe we have, you know, prevented them from making that jump because they're bringing in the Tyson Berries or the Cody Ceci's, or, you know, elevating a guy like Justin Hall. And then you have Zach Bogosian and Travis Dermott's there. And maybe the young players haven't been getting the opportunity they need because the Leafs were trying to win, but their one-off deals didn't work out, obviously, because they didn't win anything. And now they're in a position where who can you afford? And also, at the same time, who in your system is ready? And that's a really tough position to be in, because you don't know if they're ready, but you also don't know that you can really afford very many pieces to come in and complement what you already have. So that's where it's all very complicated, and it's a bit messy, and it looks daunting. It looks like a daunting task for Dubas to get this team in order before they open their season on October 13th against Montreal. But as he also pointed out yesterday, it's going to look different in September. It's not what you see right now is not what you will see then. And I suppose we can take him at his word and say, okay, like, let's see what you've got up your sleeve. But it must be, you know, a very big sleeve in order for all these holes to be filled and be filled well enough for the Leafs to be a truly competitive team next year.
We will get to your UFA list. I promise that we will. We've been trying to for a week, but we have to break now. We're going to bring on Mel Pearson, the Michigan Wolverines head coach, because he's got three guys that will go in the top 10 and maybe the top two picks, which is quite an achievement. So Mel Pearson is next, and then later on we'll try and squeeze in Kristen's UFA list. This is Leafs Lunch, TSN 1050.
Now, back to Leafs Lunch.
Leafs Lunch, Jim Taddy and Kristen Schulten with you. Subbing for Andy Petrillo coming up very shortly. We will have Mel Pearson, Michigan Wolverines head coach, and he's going to be a happy guy today if he isn't already. So let's deal with one quick question before we bring Mel in. You know, you go back to that Nedeljkovic acquisition by Detroit yesterday, the young goaltender, and a lot of people would look at that and say the Leafs, maybe not on him, but could pull off a similar trade like that. Pierre is reporting that Bernier and Mrazek are in pursuit by Carolina. They want to sign them both, and Reimer would go to the UFA market. We'll explore that later on because our guest is here now. Mel Pearson, Michigan Wolverines head coach. Mel, you have the welcome in, and you have this embarrassment of riches. Your defenseman could go first overall. Then you've got a couple of centers that, I mean, one of them could go second. You've got another center on the same team that could go in the top 10. That is phenomenal. How do you feel about all this?
Well, thanks, Jim, and thanks, Kristen, for having me on. No, they're very fortunate to have players like that and young men like that. Obviously, it's not very often that you have a group like this, and you know, I guess you can say good recruiting, and it all starts there. And I have great assistant coaches who did a fabulous job, you know, bringing those young men to Michigan.
We just had Craig Button on, and he could not say enough good things about Owen Power. How would you describe him as a player and a person, and just how special is he, and what will that look like for the Buffalo Sabres if they do end up taking him at number one?
Well, if they do take him, they're getting an exceptional young man, first and foremost. You know, he's humble, hardworking, really outgoing. He's very driven. He wants to be a player, really good academically. Comes from a fabulous family. His parents have done a great job raising Owen, and you can see the type of person is when you meet his parents. But on the ice, he does everything extremely well. I don't know if there's one attribute that you latch on to, but just given his size, how well he moves, he's a really good skater, high hockey IQ, good hands, likes to drive the play offensively. Got a great stick and obviously great reach defensively, but he's just a well-rounded player. Competes, wants to be the best player not only on our team but the best player on the ice every night. So they'll be getting a heck of a hockey player and a heck of a person.
You know, potential is one thing. Watching it mature in front of your eyes is quite another thing, and fun to have that happen. When you look at Owen Power, when he walked in the door to where he is now, what's happened there?
Well, he's grown in a lot of different areas. Like we all do, some things to improve on. And the thing I liked about him most is he latched on not so much his strengths. You know, he continued to work on that. But the things he needed to improve on, just his pivoting. In transition from forward to backwards, just breakouts and how he lugs the puck to play a faster game. He likes to have the puck on a stick. And at times, you know, he had to just move it quicker and faster and get it up to the forwards. And, he learned to do that. I mean, just his growth over the year, I think you've subtly have seen him go from, not a boy, but a young man slowly transitioning to a man, you know, just his physical stature is one thing that he has to continue to improve on, but he made great strides there. It's just getting stronger. And I think you saw that, you know, going from playing, you know, junior kids last year to college kids this year to playing in the world championships at the end of the year.
Now, we know that the center position, of course, is not an easy one at any level, but especially in the NHL, it's a tough position to grow into. You've got two young centers here in Matty Beniers and Kent Johnson, who we could see go high in this draft as well. Why do you think that they might be able to make that transition into the NHL and be successful there, maybe sooner than later, given where they're projected to be drafted?
Yeah, that's a really good question, Kristen. And I have a lot of respect, obviously, for the National Hockey League. It's the best league in the world, has the best players. And, you know, the thing about Matty Beniers is he's a coach's dream because he plays the game the right way. And I know that's referenced a lot, but he really does. He plays just as hard without the puck and defensively as he does with it. So he's got a good combination of offensive skills. Can score, can make plays, drives the play, really good skater. And then on the other side of it, though, the other side of the puck is he works extremely hard without it. And that's what makes him, I guess, the player that he is right now and why people value him and you see him ranked so high in the draft. Really good personality. He's the kind of guy, when he walks in the door at the rink, you're happy to see him. He's so engaging. He just makes your team better. Just because of the vibe that he presents within your locker room. So whoever gets him is getting a tremendous young man and a fun guy to be around and a really good all-around hockey player.
I guess Owen Power said he'll... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to just talk about Kent a little bit. I think the other player, Kristen, was alluding to. And Kent's a little bit different than Matty. Extremely gifted offensively, very creative, is one of the best players I've seen as just far as his skill, his hands, his edges on his skates, knowing, just the offensive creativity that he has, likes to have the puck on a stick, could just continue to get better and better. The only thing that's holding Kent back really is just his strength right now. You know, he came in as a young player and only weighed maybe 165 pounds, but as he gets older, as he gets stronger, he puts that lower body strength on, he's got a chance to be a really special player just because you can't teach the things that he brings to the game each and every night.
You've got three guys here. Owen Power says he's going to come back. I would assume that all three will be back, right?
Well, I hope so. That would be a coach's dream. The National Hockey League is a man's league. It's a tough league, and to be able to make it is one thing, but be able to contribute and perform on a nightly basis and have success is really difficult. And you look at Lafreniere and even Jack Hughes and Dahlin got a great start in Buffalo, but the last couple of years have been tough on him. So you just want to make sure you're ready when you make that jump. And I just can look at Quinn Hughes, who, came back for a sophomore year here at Michigan and grew so much from his freshman to his sophomore year to be able to make the jump to Vancouver. Josh Norris, who played 2 years for us here at Michigan and then obviously made the all-rookie team this year playing, for Ottawa. And that second year really helped him. Cal McCarr is another great example. Not a Michigan player, but, again, came back for, that second year, made the transition seamless. So I think, all those young men can come back and get stronger and continue to develop and be more ready to play in the NHL after that second year.
Mel, thanks for your time. Enjoy your night. This is a proud moment for sure. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me on.
Mel Pearson, Michigan Wolverines head coach. I got to tell you, Kristen, when we get back in the studio, I'm not going to miss the delay. That is an acquired
taste. No, that'll
taste.
Be nice.
Oh, boy. That is something to work through. Okay, let's get to your UFA pursuit list for the Leafs. I want to squeeze this in. Who do you have on it?
All right, so I will preface this by saying my five are the five that I think are the best fit in terms of where they might, how they would help the team. Its dollar figures would all have to be figured out, but these are my five. My number five is Alex Galchenyuk. I think he should be a target for the Leafs. There's more there, I think, for him. He fit in really well. He seemed to grow with each game, getting more confident. Unfortunate turnover, obviously, in the playoffs, but I have Galchenyuk at five. Number four, I have Mike Hoffman. because the Leafs power play, as we know, because we talked about it endlessly, was not good in the second half of last season. Mike Hoffman is kind of a power play specialist. I mean, you look at 35 power play goals for him the last few seasons. He does a lot of good things on the power play. That's just an area where, especially if Zach Hyman is off elsewhere, they're going to need a player they can rely on there. Joe Thornton also played a significant, or he was a part of that power play group. He's not coming back as that we know at this point. So I think Mike Hoffman's a decent target there. Number three, I have Thomas Tatar because he could come cheap. I thought he had a decent regular season. They didn't play him as much in the playoffs, and that raises some red flags. But I do think that might lower the cost on him, and the Leafs are all about value at this point. I still think that there's more that Tatar can bring as well, so I have him on my list. Number two, I have Mikael Granlund. I like him as a player. I think he could fit in very well with what the Leafs need. Just that kind of guy who maybe has some of the physicality to his game as well. And you know that he could probably fit in pretty well in that top six. And then the number one for me is Jaden Schwartz. If there was one player that the Leafs could sign, I think it should be him. He's not a reclamation project, but he's 29. He's had some injury issues. And he's a pass-first guy and not flashy, but I think the Leafs need that, especially if you're looking for someone to complement an Austin Matthews. You know that Matthews likes to shoot it. He needs somebody to get him the puck like Hyman did. Schwartz, he forechecks, he backchecks, he's got a good two-way game. So I would say that's, if you're trying to replace a Zach Hyman, maybe a Jaden Schwartz is a good place to start looking.
So, in reverse order, from the bottom up, in other words, Galchenyuk, Hoffman, Tatar, Granlund, and Schwartz. I like that list, and I really like the Hoffman choice just because, that's a void. I mean, that power play, if you had somebody who could contribute on a regular basis, that changes everything, doesn't it?
Absolutely, it does. And I just think there needs to be an infusion of new talent there. So why not find it on the open market? And hey, you know what? Mike Hoffman's, he's had 20 goals every season except for last year in his career. That was a bit of a down year for him. Maybe he's willing to take a little less and come to a competitive team.
I like the list. My apologies for taking a week to get to it. But so many things happen. Let's look at it that way. Kristen, enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, you too, Jim.
Okay, and everybody else have a great weekend. Game day is next on TSN 1050.